Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Back in on the drive, as you just heard from Rob, Hall of Fame quarterback Kurt Warner will be on the show coming up in about 15 minutes. Special thanks to NFL Network and thanks to Jay Binkley. Speaking of NFL Network, this is Mike Girardi. A source tells him that the Miami Dolphins are, quote, waving around a fair amount of money in Le'Veon Bell's direction. As reported earlier today on NFL Network, the Chiefs thought they were going to get a deal done with Bell last night, but the chase continues. That was from Mike Girardi of NFL Network. So Miami making a strong push to get Le'Veon Bell. Miami obviously making a strong push to go from being the ninth pick to the 12th pick by adding Le'Veon Bell. I do think Kansas City wants Le'Veon Bell. I do think that Bell wants to be in Kansas City, but I do think we know enough about Le'Veon Bell to say he is going to take the team that offers him the most money
and get the most opportunity. And frankly, he could be the biggest difference maker. Like, if he came to Kansas City, I don't think he's worth a win or a half a win or anything like that at this point in his career. I'd say the same thing about Buffalo. They both got established running backs ahead of him. But if he goes down to Miami, in theory, I mean, maybe he takes them from a 7-win team to a 9-win team and they grab one of those last wild card spots. So he already lives down there. Miami's a pretty dope spot. I would highly consider becoming a Dolphin.
This actually just popped in my head because we have Kurt Warner coming up. Whose story do you think is more improbable, Warner's or Brady's? Because we talk a whole lot about Brady being the 99th overall pick and Bledsoe and the injury and the Tuck rule. Like, we all know Brady's story. I don't feel like we talk enough about Kurt Warner's story and how his story is really a movie. Undrafted guy out of Northern Iowa, Trent Green goes down in the preseason. They then have this guy that nobody's heard of who was bagging groceries, and he wins NFL MVP that year. Like, I don't think we give Kurt Warner's story enough praise, how it is the prototypical Disney movie story.
Well, not only that, but then remember he went to New York after that and he was done. Like, when he was on the Giants, I think that they threw him, they said, "You're done, man. Like, you're the backup now." And after that is when he went to Arizona and revived his career again and took that team to a Super Bowl. So yeah, I mean, Kurt Warner, and when he first started, remember, yeah, he was the bagger and then he ended up being the rookie of the year and all that. He was 26, 27 years old. So who knows how good Kurt Warner would have been if he got the opportunity out the gates.
I mean, you're right. I mean, so at age 33, this was in 2004, he started 9 games for the Giants. They went 5-4. He had 6 touchdowns and 4 interceptions. And then he got cut from the New York Giants. He then went to Arizona. He was bad his first couple of years in Arizona. I mean, he had a 3 or 4 year stretch where Warner was bad. And then 2007 happened. He went 27 touchdowns, 17 interceptions the next year. 30 touchdown passes and 14 interceptions at age 37 years old. Like, Kurt Warner has had two very, very different stops of Hall of Fame career, obviously, from Kurt Warner. I want to play this audio for you guys really quickly. This is Patrick Mahomes. He was asked about playing the game on another Monday.
Just your overall thoughts on playing in the afternoon on Monday, how weird that is. And do you get with the mayor to try to get people out of work early to try to get them a little lighter to watch the ball game?
I didn't think about that with the mayor, but hopefully people are able to watch it whenever they get off work and everything like that. But for me, it's just like any other football game. We understood the challenges coming into this season and had to be able to expect the unexpected. And it's going to be a Monday game, which will be our third Monday game in 4 weeks or whatever it is. And so we're excited for the opportunity to get to play in front of everybody and get to play against a great football team.
this is going to be a season of a whole lot of firsts, but I saw a stat that the Chiefs are the first team in 74 years to play 3 out of 4 games on Monday night. Only two of them being scheduled, or excuse me, one of them being a scheduled Monday night game. The schedule has definitely mismatched and moved everywhere around. The Chiefs playing on another Monday, this game against the Bills.
Technically a Monday afternoon, but I get your point. Why don't you call the mayor? That's your man's in him. See if you can get people out of work early to go watch the Chiefs play.
Something tells me the, you know, most famous person in the history of the city maybe has a little bit more juice than I have. You're right. Quinn Lucas is my guy.
He's busier though. Like you got a little time on your hands. Call Quentin and see if you can get these people out of work at 4 o'clock. Dude, like do something for the people.
I don't know if Quentin Lucas has enough pull to maybe make CBS change their $1 billion television schedule. I will say this though a little bit. And I don't know if this is me getting on my soapbox or me being complained out just a little bit, but the people complaining about the game time just need to relax. The Royals played 4 playoff games during the day. I didn't hear a whole lot of complaining then. Kansas basketball. How many times have you got to watch Kansas play Holy Cross in that 116 matchup at 2 o'clock? People tell me their favorite thing about March Madness is you get out of work and you watch the games and you do all these kind of things. You're telling me that you can't take a half day? We're in a pandemic. Half of you are working from home anyway right now. I don't want to keep hearing people complaining about the game being at 4 o'clock. Is it ideal? No. Would it be a lot better if they played at 6 or 6:30? Absolutely. But if you could watch the 2014 ALCS that started Wednesday at 3 o'clock with a little bit of notice, you can prepare for Chiefs Bills.
I love random middle of the day, middle of the week sports. It's great. Like that's what the NBA gave us in the bubble, right? We'd look up, it was Tuesday at 4:35 and there's a game that's already in the second quarter. It's like when the Olympics are on, it doesn't matter if it's midnight, if it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you got sports going on. Like you said, the NCAA, like March Madness tournament. And now if they did this every single week and people had to take off for work because the Chiefs are playing Wednesday at noon, well then yeah, it might become an issue. But one time, like I kind of think it's fun.
Yeah, I'm excited about it too. This is just you to me this year, just showing you got to adjust. And I don't know when NFL games are anymore. Like they typically used to be on Sunday. Now they can be on Tuesday. I think at some point we'll get a Wednesday game and they'll push other things back. Like this is just going to be the season where there's just going to be pro football games on every single day. And the NFL is committed to this television dollar. So you just got to be prepared. You got to be flexible. I can't imagine being a player in that scenario where we talk about how football players are so regimented, so routine. I don't know how you can have a routine when you don't know when you're going to play, but that's 2020. You just got to live with it.
Yeah. So since last Thursday, we had a game and then we had football on Sunday, obviously. And then we had football on Monday. We were going to have 2 games on Monday, even though one of those ended up getting canceled. We had football on Tuesday and then we got football again. Is there a game tonight?
No, there's not a game.
No game tonight. So that kills my theory. But either way, we've had a lot of NFL football.
There was supposed to be a game today. They moved it to Monday, the Chiefs game.
I guess there's probably not a game tonight since the Chiefs will not be playing football tonight. That makes sense.
Coming up in a little bit, we'll be joined by Kurt Warner, Hall of Fame quarterback with NFL Network. He'll be on the show coming up in just a little bit. Of all the takes that you have given, this next take is maybe the most surprising take you've given in 2020. You think the Chiefs line is too big in the direction of the Chiefs?
Yeah, because if you look at it, so I pay a lot of attention to these lines, like more attention than anybody should pay. And you can actually make bets at the beginning of the year before any games are played, right? It's futures bet. So I was looking at what the line was, and it started off, the Chiefs were like, I think it was like a 4.5, 5-point favorite against Buffalo. And then obviously both teams got out the gates really hot. Buffalo's looking really good. And the line went down just a little bit. It got down to as low as like, I think I saw it at 2 points before both teams lost. And now I just checked it again. It's up to like 3.5 or something like that. It feels like a pick'em game to me. It really does. And you know that I was just coming on last week, and maybe the Raiders scared me away.
I can't believe that Derek Carr has shaken your faith this much in the Kansas City
Think
Chiefs.
About how bad they
you
lost.
You think the Chiefs are the most talented team in the history of the NFL paper. Now they're a pick'em against Buffalo in a neutral site game with no fans? What's going on here?
I'm telling you what's going on. It's what I just saw. Like, and maybe I'm just getting scared here. But so if they were, what'd they go off as? Like a 12-point favorite, I think.
I mean, did we just see Buffalo get the absolute beats too? It ain't like Buffalo in their last game beat Tennessee 41-0 and Kansas City struggled. Both teams got the beats the last time they went out there.
So you can't use the one team's going to be focused and one team isn't because both teams lost. Of course, both teams are going to be focused, which is why the game should be a pick 'em. They've got the same record. The game's in Buffalo. Both teams are coming off a loss. And right now, the odds makers tell me that Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes are pretty pretty close to being MVP. So, again, I think the reason that the Chiefs are favored in this game.
Because they're better than Buffalo.
I agree with you. They are better than Buffalo. You know who else are better than? The Raiders. And the Raiders beat them down. So you know how the NFL works. Like, sometimes it's when is the game played? Where's the game played? How'd you do last week? Who's healthy? And I'm not saying that I think the Chiefs are going to lose this game, and I wouldn't pick against them. I'm just surprised that they're a 3.5-point favorite right now, because to me, if there was ever a game that's a pick 'em, this seems like it would be it.
I actually think the line is just about right in this. Like, I want to put my daughter's future college fund on your pick 'em scenario. I would take the Chiefs in a pick 'em scenario with no fans against any team in the NFL right now. I would take them against Seattle, who's not having fans. I take them against Green Bay. I take them against Baltimore. If you're going to give me a scenario where it's just go out and play football, and I know I'm going to get the Chiefs' best effort like I think they're going to give against Buffalo, I'll take the Chiefs in a pick 'em scenario and all that. This is about what I think the line should be. I think Kansas City is about 3 to 4 points better than Buffalo. I think Buffalo's a good team. I'm not sure if Buffalo's on that tier one yet. I do think Kansas City's on that tier one, and that wasn't really shaken with the loss last week. So I actually think the line about right.
Yeah, of course Kansas City's on tier one. They just won the Super Bowl. Everybody knows that. All I'm saying is I think the reason that the line is what it is because of what the Chiefs were last year. Exactly what you're saying. Because if you just talk about what both teams have done this year, they're both 4-1. They both got a great quarterback. We both like their head coaches, and they're both coming off a game they got their asses kicked. Oh, and the game's being played in Buffalo, albeit without fans, but the game's being played where the Chiefs have to travel. So, again, I think the Chiefs are going to win the game. And if you said the Chiefs are favored by a point or whatever, I'd say cool, because they are the better team. 3.5 just seems a little bit too big to me.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Kurt Warner, Hall of Fame quarterback. He is currently with NFL Network. Don't turn that dial. Kurt Warner next. It's The Drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
Back in on The Drive, it is an honor to be joined by our next guest. He's a Super Bowl champion, two-time NFL Most Valuable Player. He is also in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He's currently an NFL Network analyst. You can see him every Sunday on NFL Game Day starting at 8 a.m. Central. You can also catch Chiefs and Bills. It will be on Fox, NFL Network, and Amazon Prime. That's where I always watch it, Mondays at 4 o'clock Central. Let's head to the phone lines right now to be joined by the Hall of Famer, Kurt Warner, joins us on the show. Kurt, really appreciate you coming on today.
You bet. How you guys doing?
Doing good. I just want to tell you that you were supposed to go on with our night show host, but you were traded to this show for one Chipotle burrito and one six pack. So I just want to tell you that your appearance is worth like $17.
I am worth one burrito. Well, let's hope it was a good six-pack, I guess.
Right now, we're very happy to be joined by Kurt Warner. Let's start here. You're a Hall of Fame quarterback. What do you make of this quarterback matchup on Monday between Mahomes and Josh Allen?
Well, I mean, I'm excited to see it like everybody else. I mean, obviously, I'm a huge fan of Patrick Mahomes and what he brings and, you know, the completeness to his game and then, obviously, the unbelievable talent. And, you know, I've been excited to watch Josh Allen continue to progress. You know, every year what you're looking for, you know, when he came out, I think everybody felt he was a bit of a project, hadn't played a lot of football, and it was going to take some time. And every year he just seems to get better and better and better. And obviously, you know, outside of Tuesday night, he's played some phenomenal football. So it's going to be fun. Anytime you can get two marquee guys that are playing at the quarterback position, you know, leading their teams on the big stage, it's a must-watch for me, and I can't wait to see it.
I was going to ask you about Josh Allen. I've been surprised at his improvement from an accuracy standpoint, but watching him, what do you think he still needs to improve upon? Because on Monday or Tuesday, we did see Allen struggle against the Titans.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for Josh Allen is he's got to continually get more and more comfortable inside the pocket and to continually develop a plan. You know, I talk about this all the time, is that as a quarterback, you got to always have a plan, because, you know, a play might be designed for one thing, and it's great if you get that and the game becomes easy, but then you have to have a plan if that doesn't work out or if you don't get exactly what you're expecting. And I think the biggest thing with Josh is that he needs to continually work on having a plan beyond just number one, you know, and his plan has been, you know, if I don't have my first guy, run around and create. And he's been unbelievable at that. I mean, he's been great with his legs, whether that's, you know, running or buying time and making big plays. But I just think that's a hard world to live in. no matter how talented you are, is to think you're going to make those kind of plays week in and week out at the highest level against the greatest teams. You have to be better at having a plan, playing on schedule, making, you know, the plays you're supposed to make, and then add those special plays. And so, to me, that's really where Josh Allen needs to get better. He's great on the first reads, as you said. He's getting more accurate. He's making big plays. He's great at ad-libbing, but it's that intermediate stuff in between that that I think he needs to grow and get better to become a complete player.
Kurt, when you're watching some of the best offenses in today's football, like, say, the Chiefs from a couple of years ago when they put up, I think it was like 35.7 points per game, as the guy that quarterbacked the greatest show on turf, do you even humor the idea that maybe that offense was better than yours?
Well, I try not to humor it too much. you try to hold on to those things, and because it's across the eras, we'll never know. So we're always going to try to hang on to what we did. It's always so tough to try to compare, especially across eras, especially where the game is right now. It's such a completely different game, you know, from a rule standpoint, from a design standpoint, than it was when we played. I think you see, you know, the great Bronco teams, the great Patriot teams, you know, that great Chiefs team you're talking about. And without question, you know, you sit back and go, man, it's just fun to watch, and these guys are really, really good. And you appreciate the greatness of those teams. If we ever got into an argument, I'd, of course, argue for my guys and our team, because I do believe we ushered in kind of this new NFL, and we did it at a time when the rules weren't designed for offenses. And I think that what separates us maybe a little bit, and because of the unbelievable talent that we had. But, you know, it's always a great argument and a fun argument, and there's been a lot of great offensive teams over the years.
The two guys, since I've been doing this in the game of football, that I just think are the nicest human beings ever, Kurt, would be Ron Jaworski and Dick Vermeil. Do you still ever get a chance to keep up with him, and what was it like being able to win the Super Bowl for that guy?
I talk to Dick quite often. We text back and forth, and we definitely stay in touch. And, you know, I'll tip my hat that it's more Coach Vermeil than it probably is me. I could do a better job with that. And Coach Vermeil has always been incredible in terms of his relationship with his players. You know, you can go all the way back to guys that played for him when they were in high school, and they say the same thing about him, that he's always reaching out. He's always trying to stay in touch and find out what's going on in people's lives. And so he is incredible in that regard, and that carried over to the way that he coached. And it's why everybody that ever played for him loved playing for him and wanted to play for him and wanted to go out there and give their best, because they had a coach that truly cared about them. And you know, I look back now, and it's kind of funny to me, because I have such a great relationship with Coach Vermeil, and we're so close. And when I think back on my career, I feel like I played for Coach Vermeil for 10 years. And, you know, because we have that relationship and all of those things. And when you look back at it, I was actually only with the Rams 2 years that Dick was there. And it was only the year that we won the Super Bowl where I was playing and he was my head coach. But he's had that kind of an impression upon me that I feel like I played for him for a decade. And it just speaks to the man and the character and the impression that he leaves upon the people that come in his path.
Right now we're talking to Kurt Warner. He is with NFL Network. He is an analyst. You can catch him every Sunday on NFL Game Day morning starting at 8 a.m. Central. I want to ask you a couple wide receiver questions and how they affect the Kansas City Chiefs. They're not going to have Sammy Watkins, who is out with the hamstring. Whenever you lost a receiver on one of your teams, what kind of effect did that have? Because watching Sammy Watkins, he just opens the field up for Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously a top-notch receiver. And, you know, the one fortunate thing that I had a number of times in my career was, you know, we look at a lot of teams and we go, okay, they got their number one receiver and then they've got their number two receiver. And what always, you know, helped me and made some of the teams I was on special was that we would have at least two number one receivers, whether it was Isaac Ntori, whether it was Anquan and Larry, that I had two number ones. And having two number ones, it really helps define things for you offensively. And then if you can add another guy to the mix, so, I mean, you got Tyreek Hill, a legit number one. You got Travis Kelce, a legit number one. You got Sammy Watkins, a legit number one. And so anytime you have those difference-making players and guys that you know are a matchup problem, no matter who on the other team matches up against them, it's a difference maker for your team. And so to lose any of those guys definitely hurts. Now, doesn't mean they don't have some other guys that can obviously play and run and do some of the things, you know, that Sammy Watkins can do. But I think Sammy Watkins is more complete than the other guys that they have, and that's what you miss, is having a guy that's more complete, can do everything, that you can count on to make big plays and step up big in big moments. So it definitely hurts, but, you know, the cupboard is not there, and they still have plenty of options in which they can play their game and they can stretch the field and they can play to their strengths, even without Sammy in there.
Kurt, a guy I want to ask you about is Mecole Hardman. You guys had a player in Oz Hakeem who was sort of in the same role. What are the challenges in turning a player like that into a every down wide receiver? Because I would say Kansas City, that they've sort of struggled to do the same thing with Hardman.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the first thing you have to realize is that not every receiver is built or made to be a number one receiver, meaning that you can put them anywhere on the field. They can do anything. They can they can live under that pounding. They can run every kind of route. That's just not the nature of every player. And so that's why those guys are so special. And then other times you have to have guys that are role players. And so, you know, Oz was a perfect fit for us. What he was as a slot receiver, what he was run after catch, the ability to put him in positions where it truly played to his strength, was who he was. You know, he left the Rams and ended up signing a contract with Detroit to kind of be more of a number one guy. And it never really solidified. He was never able to become that guy. It doesn't mean he wasn't a great receiver and could be as effective as a number one. It just meant that his skill set didn't play to him being in a certain role that you usually ask a number one receiver to play. And that really becomes oftentimes the bigger question is, we want everybody to become a number one receiver, but not everybody is built to be a number one receiver. Some guys are going to be limited in the routes that they can run, the positions on the field that they can play, and you've got to be able to accept that. And the key is you need those guys. You have to have guys like that fit around your number one guys to make you a complete offense and allow you to do what you want to do. So it's not a knock on somebody that they're not built that way, but I'm just not sure Mecole at this point in time shows me that he can be that route runner, and he can play in every spot, and he can win on every different kind of route. I just haven't seen that yet from him as a young kid, which is okay because there's certain things he does that are special and different. You just got to make sure you put him in those spots more often than not, and then use your more complete players to fill in the gaps.
Kurt, we were just talking about this before you came on, thinking back on your career and some of the unlikely things you were able to accomplish. When you're just chilling in the man cave, what part of your career do you think was more unlikely to happen that ended up being a wild success, your career with the Rams or your career later on with the Cardinals?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I was doing just a podcast yesterday, and it kind of came up in that podcast. And, you know, it's funny because I think both of them, yeah, I guess you got to probably say that the first part was more unlikely. I mean, to go from where I was and playing arena football and you know, the whole grocery store thing, and then, you know, coming on the scene like I did and having success that we did early, I think is definitely more unlikely. But I take a lot of pride in the second chapter, you know, when everybody thought I couldn't do it anymore, and then maybe more importantly, my marriage with the Cardinals, because nobody ever thought the Cardinals could do it. Nobody thought I could do it at that time. And to be able to help, you know, lift an organization and be a part of, you know, that turnaround at the end of my career. And I think there's something to, you know, I look back at certain things and like the second to last game I played in my career, the last game I played in Arizona in the playoffs, you could argue was the greatest game that I ever played in my career. And so there was something, you know, that I take great pride in the fact that I really felt like I played just as well, if not better, football at the very end of my career as I did at the beginning of my career. And, you know, as a player, I think that's part of what you want to be your legacy. You want people to remember you playing your best football, you know, regardless of the moment in time. And, you know, I felt like I was able to do that in Arizona. So I really enjoyed and take great pride in what we accomplished here in Arizona. But, you know, if I'm choosing one or the other, I'm probably choosing the Rams just because of how it played out and how things took off so quickly that first year.
That is a Super Bowl champion. He also won Super Bowl MVP, two-time NFL MVP. He also is in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. You can catch him on NFL Network. He is an analyst every Sunday on NFL Game Day morning at 8 a.m. Central. You can also catch Chiefs and Bills this Monday on Fox, NFL Network, or Amazon Prime at 4 o'clock. Kurt, it was an honor to have you on our show today. Thanks a lot for coming on.
You got it. We'll talk to you guys down the road, hopefully.
Absolutely. That is Kurt Warner joining us on the show today. I think I speak for everybody. It was an honor to watch him play.
That was cool.
A joy to watch him play. Was a big fan of his when he was playing for the St. Louis Rams. Speaking of quarterbacks, coming up next, I have a toss-up question to ask you guys, and we'll take a trip inside the mind of the machine. Stick around. It's The Drive.
The Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
Back in on The Drive, if you have a fantasy football question, go ahead and start texting it in, 913-576-7610. Benny Heiss will be on the show coming up in about 10 minutes. I did have a quarterback toss-up question. At some point, I will ask that quarterback toss-up question, but I don't want to ask that one anymore. I have another toss-up question to ask you guys. So on TMZ.com, there was a story. I clicked on the story because the headline said Kansas City Chiefs player Super Bowl ring already hits the auction block. And I'm like, hold on. They just got these things. How is somebody already selling their Super Bowl ring? So I clicked on the story because I didn't want to be your prototypical millennial and I wanted to read a little bit more about it. So Mike Weber, who I did not know was a real human being until just now, he was on the practice squad for some period of time last year. He gets a ring because he was on the team. He's 23 years old. He's already put his ring up for auction. It is the starting bid was at $35,000. It is at $55,000 right now with 17 days to go. Is this fair or foul? Because if you're Mike Weber, you didn't really contribute to the Super Bowl win as it is. You never caught a pass. You never had a block. You didn't have a tackle. Nobody remembers that you were on the team. But they give you this piece that commemorates your team's success. But if you're Mike Weber and you're maybe not too long for the league, you know what you need more than that? Token of the Chiefs' appreciation? The money that you could potentially get from this. How much money do you think Mike Weber has made in his NFL career? He probably hasn't touched a whole lot of paper. If you're telling me that right now I could sell something and maybe make six figures more than I made for my actual time in the Kansas City Chiefs and start a family, buy a house, maybe take care of it, I don't know, his home situation. Is this a fair or foul thing to do? He hasn't had the ring for 2 months and it's already on auction here. He could have at least waited a year or two till the block wasn't so hot. They haven't even got to the Chiefs bye week and he's already selling the ring.
No, that's exactly with the time to sell it. Cause like you said, it's hot right now. Like they just won the Super Bowl. You want to be wearing the same jewelry Patrick Mahomes has. Now your chance is you could actually own it. I'm trying to find out who this guy is. Is this the guy who went to Ohio State? Mike Weber, running back? He's a running back? Yeah, I mean, if I'm him, I want to know the ballpark that I'm going to get back for. That's the problem. Like, whenever you put something, where's he selling it? Do we know? Is this on Craigslist? Is this on eBay?
This is Golden Auctions.
Well, so I don't know anything about that.
I mean, this is one of those official auction things. Now, I don't know if you have to set a minimum on this.
That's the thing. You got to set a minimum.
eBay, you could set a minimum and do all this
kind
of stuff.
You have to set a minimum.
But something tells me, though, if you're Mike Weber and you're already in the business of selling it, you kind of hard up for cash and you need this money. Like, you couldn't wait 90 days on the Super Bowl ring and it's already up for auction. To me, that's a desperate move. That's a COVID move. I'm out of work. I got to start hawking some stuff so I can pay for my mortgage kind of move. I'm not knocking the man's hustle if that's what he has to do. But if you get something this cool, think about it. You spend your entire childhood dreaming about a Super Bowl ring. You not only get to the NFL, you then get a Super Bowl ring, and you're telling me 90 days later you're going down to the Golden Auctions like this is Uncut Gems and you already got it up for auction here? Time's got to be hard out here. Time's got
to
be hard.
I'm trying to find out how much it's worth. Like, if you can trade a piece of jewelry for a house, a car, a boat, and a second little vacation cabin, then you got to do it. I don't know if that's what it's pulling. Like, if you're going to get a Honda Accord out of the deal, then maybe you just keep the ring to show off to people. Like, I don't know how much – I honestly don't even know a ballpark of how much one of those things is worth on the open market. Like, when you resell it, is it like a car?
I think it really depends on who it is.
Value?
I mean, I'm going
well,
to
Mike
guess
Weber's
that,
doesn't add any
yeah,
value.
Yeah, I'm saying like, Patrick Mahomes' ring is obviously going for millions
I
of dollars.
I would think so.
Mike Weber's Super Bowl ring is probably going for like – maybe $125,000 in this, like maybe $150,000. I mean,
yo, that sounds high to me.
I mean, I'm just saying, I mean, right now he's at $55,000 with 17 days to go.
Really?
So these things are going to go up once you get to the last 3 or 4 days, once people know they got an opportunity to get a recent Super Bowl ring. So he'll probably get six figures, maybe a little bit more in this. You could put a really good down payment on a house if you're Mike Weber and do this. But I'm just going to contend that time's got to be hard if you're going to sell your Super Bowl ring 90 days after you get it. This might be the only person to think about all the, they gave Super Bowl rings. If you went to every single game in 2020, they put an auction up for you to get a Super Bowl ring. Everybody got a ring if you're associated with the Kansas City Chiefs. This is probably the only one right now you can buy.
I doubt it. Like, if as many people got rings that we're under the impression they got rings, and
I can't think of anybody else. I haven't read any. Maybe I'm wrong. I haven't read any other story where somebody was selling theirs. I could be wrong. Maybe there's one right now on eBay. You can go on there and you can get the guy who works in the ticket office a Super Bowl ring. The only one we know that's up for that I can buy right now is Mike Webb.
How much is an equipment manager you think making? Just like roughly, how much do you think that job pays?
Probably like 100 to 150, somewhere in that range.
Okay, so let's say that, and I probably my guess would have been a little bit less. But if one of those people has a Super Bowl ring, I would be very surprised if there hasn't been another one at some point taken to a pawn shop in or around the greater Kansas City area. Like, one? We were told that they gave out how many rings? Didn't they give out 600 of these things?
Yeah, a bunch.
Something tells me Mike Weber's isn't the only one that's in other hands at this point.
We'll see. Coming up in a little bit, we'll be joined by Benny Heiss. He will join us coming up in a little bit. If you have a fantasy question, go ahead and text it in, 913-576-7610. But before we do that, let's take a trip inside the mind of the machine.
Got the Battle of the Bays this Sunday, Green Bay versus Tampa. See, I know you're a huge Tom Brady believer. I assume that you think Green Bay rolls them up in that game?
I don't think they roll them up, but I think that Green Bay is going to win the football game. You guys know where I sit on Tampa Bay. I think Tampa Bay is a paper champion. I think they've got a lot of really good pieces. That'd probably be a really good team in 2012 or 2013. Like, if you were playing Madden on PS3, they'd be a great team. But unfortunately, the PS5 is coming out in less than a month.
Last night, Rob, the Dodgers scored 11 runs in the first inning. Do you think they can come back from down 2-0 against the Atlanta Braves?
Yes, because they have enough talent to do it. I don't know they were going to score 11 in the first inning again, but I think that smells like a 7-game series to me, which is good for the Rays. I think the Rays series is a 5 or 6 gamer, so they'll have a few days of rest to be ready for the Dodgers.
Braves. The new Borat movie's coming out, boys. The first Borat movie, did you find it hilarious or a little bit overrated?
Hilarious for me, but I was also 17, so I was like key demo to find that all amazing.
It was okay. I mean, that's not really my kind of humor, but I can acknowledge that it was funny. And if that kind of comedy is your lane, you probably love Borat.
Is this the third Borat or the second Borat? I believe the third, right? Like, didn't they make two that were in theaters, or am I just making that second one?
This is
one
Borat
up?
Number two, to my knowledge.
Huh. Yeah, I remember seeing Borat 1 on a screener.
And this isn't in theaters, I believe, right? And
Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
Amazon Prime's really soon. Amazon Prime's actually buying up a lot of movies right now.
Celebrity birthday time. Gabrielle Union, C-Dot.
46.
Okay, I'm trying to think. You think she's the same age as D-Wade? Or
I think
she's older?
I think she's a little bit older.
Okay, so D-Wade would be like 35. I'll say she's 41.
She is 47 years old.
Oh, wow.
That was not the best logic to figure that out either.
Well, I just figured
we agreed that she's older than Dwayne Wade, so you're trying to figure out Dwayne Wade's age. Like, sometimes that math works, and sometimes it just makes no sense.
Well, D-Wade's probably 35. I didn't know it was a 12-year gap. She doesn't look like she's 12 years older than Dwayne Wade, so good for her.
Well, she looks like she's about 27.
Mm-hmm.
Deontay Wilder.
35.
31.
34.
I'm on fire today.
You're doing playing well.
Dog the Bounty Hunter.
68.
Is he alive? I'm not trying to be funny.
Yeah, his wife passed away.
I knew somebody in that.
Yeah, no, he's still alive.
I knew somebody had passed.
He's still taking the law into his own hands and bringing down the criminals. I love Dog the Bounty Hunter.
64.
Dog 67 years old.
I had that one shrouded.
Happy birthday whenever it officially is. Dog. Nick Saban and his Alabama Crimson Tide were supposed to take on the Dogs. Supposed to play Georgia. Who you got in that game? I assume it's still going to happen.
I'm actually going to take Georgia in this game. No Nick Saban in this. The defense for Alabama is incredibly vulnerable. I think this is as shaky as Alabama's been in a while. I think this is the time that the Dogs finally nip them.
Mark Cuban, who is really doing a nice thing with Delonte West, trying to get him back on track.
Those guys, that Delonte West was skydiving or something.
So yeah, so Cuban didn't go. Delonte West did. If I'm Mark Cuban, I'm a billionaire. I never put myself in those situations. Like, I don't care if I'm the biggest risk taker out there. If I got that much money, I'm just chilling like Matt Dillon. But if I'm Delonte West, maybe I'll go skydiving.
I'm not doing it regardless of my financial situation. I mean, broke people can't really afford to jump out of planes either. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but we've had the opportunity here. I remember like a year ago, there was an email, like a mass email sent out to everybody that said, does anybody want to go skydiving? And nobody at our radio station at 610 responded.
I don't have any interest in
it. But Rob, cowards. You weren't here at the time. You would have done it?
I would have done it. For free, I'd jump on an airplane, no doubt.
Yeah, I don't remember this email. That probably went directly to spam. I mean, I'm thinking that
There's no way in hell you were going to do it.
I'm thinking that Microsoft Outlook already knew my answer, so it didn't ever let me see this, because there's no way I'm jumping out of a perfectly fine, good airplane. Like, that sounds absolutely stupid.
When my parents' divorce got final, my dad jumped out of an airplane, and I'll never forget it. So I didn't want to go. It was early in the morning, and me and my sisters went. And there's a guy on the ground that's got a walkie-talkie that's communicating with the pilot, whoever's up in the airplane. And dad jumps out, so we're kind of waiting to eventually see him. And the guy on the ground with the walkie-talkie yells, "What? What? Oh, crap." And he goes sprinting. Me and my sisters kind of look at each other like, I don't think this is supposed to happen. What happened, C-Dot, was when the guy, so it was one of those tandem jumps, and when the guy pulled the parachute went flying off like 1,000 yards in the opposite direction. And so they had to use the backup chute. And the guy said that he's made over 1,700 jumps. It was only the second time he's had to use his backup chute. Everybody landed and it was fine. But apparently those chutes cost like 10 grand or something like that, so they couldn't just let it float off into the abyss. Hope you like that story.
It was a fantastic story.
Thank you very much. I appreciate
It was a great story.
You did not encourage him at all to jump. Carrington is now less likely to jump.
It was a great story. Thank you. I loved it. It was riveting. I was on the edge of my seat.
I'll tell it again maybe later on the show. So
I'd rather would have heard a dog story or something about your girlfriend than one of those two stories.
If I had to pick.
Or I'd rather heard about the Zambezi Zinger or the Up in Smoke Tour than that story, to be completely frank with you.
I got plenty of those, too. I got many, many of those. Of LeBron's four NBA championships, C-Dot, which has been the most impressive?
Oh, the one down 3-1 to the Golden State Warriors. I mean, that put him firmly back in the conversation of being Michael Jordan. That is one of the most impressive feats I've ever seen a team do, especially when you factor in that Golden State team. And that's his moment. The block in that game is LeBron's moment. That is his last shot Jordan walk off the court moment, is the block against Andre Iguodala. So yeah, that one.
Which of his finals losses, since we're on the subject, is the most disappointing to Dirk?
2011, not even close. Yeah, I mean, 2011.
How'd that happen?
I mean, I would say that LeBron has had three major missteps in his career.
If he wins that one, he's 5-5 in championships, and a lot of people leave him alone.
Yeah, I would say 2011. I would say the decision and how he sort of played it, and the comments about China. I would say those are the by far and away LeBron's three biggest missteps as an NBA player.
And you know I'm not the biggest off-the-court LeBron fan, but to only have three missteps in 20 years when cameras are always on you, it's pretty damn impressive.
I'm 100% with you. Let's head to the phone lines right now, be joined by our next guest. His name is Benjamin Heisler. Heis, how do you build a fantasy football team when nobody knows when anybody plays?
You just guess. And hope that at least the situations line up accordingly. I think when it comes to like on a daily side, you know, there's within the realm of possibility that something could change. On the season long side, man, you don't know whether or not the game is going to count for week six, or if a game gets played on Wednesday night, if that all of a sudden moves to week seven. Just talk to your commissioner. Like, for all the people that are commissioning out in the leagues right now, be transparent, be honest with your league, try to give people a sense of a heads up of what's going on. And also, I don't know if you guys have noticed this too, like waiver wires right now got moved at ESPN and on Yahoo. It normally goes through on Wednesday. It went through on Thursday. So people are just confused right now. They're trying to keep their head above water.
Heis, call us back really quickly. I'm going to put you on hold here.
Sounds like your head's below water, bro. You're hanging out with Patrick Starr in a pineapple under the sea.
Do you remember when we were kids? kids and used to have those like table fans or those kind of fans that you would put in the window and you would stand in front of them and talk as a kid where you would sound like Star Wars. That's exactly, every time I think of that, I think of that scene on Tommy Boy where he's talking into the fan. That's what Heist sounded like. Just
I've had a bad experience with one of those. Like my last story really didn't really hit very well like I was expecting it to, so I don't want to tell the long version of it, but I once had a little incident with a fan at the Lake of the Ozarks. Do not stick your tongue in those things.
I don't think anybody is surprised by a I hurt myself story from Sean Levine. Oh, yeah. I think if it is a common household item, you have found a way to injure yourself.
I got scars. I got all my limbs. It's a miracle I got all my limbs.
Let's go back to the phone lines. Hopefully, Heist doesn't sound like he's talking into a ceiling fan. Heist, you there?
I'm there. Sorry, guys. I was borrowing Dane and Hughes' cell phone.
Coming up in a little bit, we'll talk about Le'Veon Bell, as it would appear that it has been narrowed down between the Chiefs and the Dolphins. Let's talk about Le'Veon Bell. Let's say he signs with Kansas City. What does that mean for Clyde Edwards-Helaire?
Yeah, it would pretty much stink for Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He'd still be getting upwards of probably 12 to 15 carries a game, but part of what leads to, you know, really solid fantasy value this year is that he's been getting plenty of opportunities as a pass catcher, too. Didn't see it in the first game, but had 8 targets against the Raiders, only caught 3 passes for 40 yards. But this is a guy that's seen 8 targets in the passing game against the Chargers, 6 against the Ravens. And I feel like with Le'Veon Bell, I don't think Bell would be the guy that would go between the tackles. You know, he really wasn't doing much of that for the New York Jets. They were using him a bunch in pass-catching situations. And even though his yards per catch weren't great, they still felt confident being able to get him the ball in space. And he was actually catching more opportunities in the red zone than running. So I just don't see Bell as that guy in between the tackles waiting patiently. I think if he came to Kansas City, he would spell Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and they would use him the way that so many other pass-catching running backs have been successful in Andy Reid's offense.
Who are your starts this week? Who are your sits this week?
All right. Starting at the quarterback spot, Ryan Fitzpatrick, great spot. Once again, he gets to go up against the New York Jets, another revenge game for him. Our gambling insider over at Sports Illustrated has basically made the New York Jets his auto fade, and he's gone pretty much perfect so far against the spread because the Jets have not won a game. Them and the Cowboys, I believe, are the only two teams that have not won a game against the spread so far this year. So I think Ryan Fitzpatrick is a guy that I will be on. I'm going to be off Baker Mayfield this week. Cleveland going to Pittsburgh. I know that Mayfield has looked impressive, but the Steelers have always seemed to have his number. And I think the Steelers defense uses this as an opportunity to get right this week. At the running back spot, it's just a great opportunity for Alexander Mattison. Most likely Dalvin Cook will be out. And I also like David Montgomery. Bears going up against the Panthers defense that ranks dead last in the NFL at stopping the run. As far as guys that I'm staying away from, I don't like the matchup at all for Joe Mixon. The Colts coming into this matchup have been a top 3 DVOA team as far as stopping the run. And then at the wide receiver spot, guys, really like the matchup. I think it's a low ownership play. It's a bit of a risk. But I really like Marvin Jones this week. There are only 3 players in the NFL that have had more red zone touchdowns since 2019 than Marvin Jones. He actually outpaces Kenny Galladay in that department. I think this is going to be his breakout game of the year. Detroit and Jacksonville, probably one of the sneaky shootouts of the week. I think both of those offenses are going to have a fantastic day. And then a wide receiver that I'm probably going to be staying away from this week. It goes back to Cleveland. I just think it's a tough matchup right now for their wide receivers. I have some concern with Odell Beckham that his health is going to be a concern. Jarvis Landry, I know that he looked good the last couple of weeks, but I just don't like him in the middle of the field against Pittsburgh.
How can you not say Mecole Hardman? You're talking about wide receivers. Isn't this his opportunity?
No, Mecole Hardman is going to have an opportunity compared to what it was before, but the targets aren't consistently there, Sean. Like, his number one game so far this year, 4 receptions for 81 yards against Baltimore and a touchdown. You know, last week against the Raiders, only had 3 targets, 2 receptions for 50 yards. I mean, it was sort of that concern that we had for Tyreek Hill when he first came into the league, is how is he going to be able to continue to do this from an efficiency level? I think if you have Mecole Hardman in season long going up against Buffalo and they're dealing with some injuries right now, Hardman's certainly in play as a flex option. And I think the fact that it's a Monday afternoon game puts him in play in the flex, but is he just a must start right now? No, there's plenty of wide receivers that are seeing more targets on a more consistent basis.
Last one for me. What do you do if you have Dak at this point?
I think there's plenty of different options. Remember, the quarterback spot, kind of like tight end and defense, Sean, you can stream week in and week out. It's not always the preferred option. If you have Mahomes or if you have Lamar Jackson or you know, Cam Newton is coming back this week, Ryan Tannehill's been a really good fantasy quarterback. There's some guys that you can just plug in each and every week knowing that they're going to be fine. But I think it's one of those spots where if you had Dak, Andy Dalton, I think from a streaming standpoint, is actually in play considering all the weapons around him. And he's just going to be matchup dependent. He gets Arizona this week at home. I think it's a favorable play for him.
Heist, we got random question time. Would you rather have Justin Jefferson or Mecole Hardman?
Justin Jefferson. He's seeing plenty more volume in this offense than he gets the Falcons.
Fitzpatrick or Watson?
Ooh, that's really, really tough. Both of them have very solid matchups this week. I will say the higher floor and the higher ceiling play will probably be Deshaun Watson.
Jimmy Graham or Gronk this week at tight end? I would just quit.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best option if you have to go with the second best option. Go with Jimmy Graham. He's at least seeing red zone opportunities. Nick Foles is looking his way for the Bears.
Somebody asked about Chase Claypool with the Pittsburgh Steelers. What should they do? Should they play him or fade him and assume that last week was luck?
No, Cleveland's had some issues. It's stopping pass catchers or stopping wide receivers so far this year. I think Chase Claypool is legit. Like, he's just a flat out. He's basically Evan Ingram as a wide receiver. Just great size, good speed, can find mismatches, and clearly Ben Roethlisberger is looking his way in a more efficient offense. So I think he's absolutely in play this week.
Cam Newton or Gardner Minshew?
Newton's probably going to be a little bit more conservative. I think Gardner Minshew, like we talked about, Jacksonville and Detroit, probably the shootout of the week. Cam might be a safer option, and I would play him if DJ Chark is out. Otherwise, it's Gardner Minshew.
Last one here, Fuller or Cooper?
Great matchup for Will Fuller. Amari Cooper may have Patrick Peterson shadowing him. But just Will Fuller, you can't trust him week in, week out. Amari Cooper, you more likely can. And he had a bad week last week. I think it's a squeaky wheel game for him. I would go Amari Cooper.
That is our guy, Fantasy Advice with Benny Heiss. Follow him on Twitter, at Benny Heiss, for more information. Thanks, Ben.
See you, boys.
That is our guy, Benny Heiss, joining us today on the show. So The Athletic is reporting that Le'Veon Bell has narrowed down his option to two teams. One team is the Kansas City Chiefs. The other team is the Miami Dolphins. We'll discuss it next. Stick around. It's The Drive.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.